Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, 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 welcome to episode 6, I believe, of the Playboys.
Hello there. How's it going?
It's going well. It's going very dramatic, melodramatic, and plenty of murders, PJ. That's how it's going.
What do you mean, Dean? Murders?
Well, today we're
be calling the police.
Today we're reviewing Hamlet, Prince of Denmark.
Oh, all right. You mean in the play? Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's right, guys. We've been delving into the Danish world of Elsinore, into the world of Hamlet, the one and only. So, Dean, what did you think of the play?
Well, I should preface it by saying I loved it. I have read this one before, and I've read them all before. I read this one about a year ago, 2 years ago, and I didn't think much of it the first time.
All right.
Like, I thought it was fine, you know, but generic or nothing special. It didn't jump out at me. This time, I was dreading to read it just because of its length. It's the longest Shakespeare play.
It is the longest
Shakespeare play. But I really, really enjoyed it. And now I know why you said it's one of the best. You know, it really is up there.
It is considered one of the best in general. It's the most popular play along with Romeo and Juliet.
Now, that surprised me. I would have thought Macbeth would be the second after Romeo and Juliet.
Well, the three of them are very popular. So I'm not sure which one is. There's a lot of debate which is the most popular. But I can resonate why the three are so popular and for different reasons. And what I love about Shakespeare, guys, is that sure, you can kind of see that Shakespeare wrote these plays, even though there's a lot of debate about whether Shakespeare wrote these plays. What I mean is some themes pop up from time to time, but really every single play has quite different focuses. And if Romeo and Juliet is about two loved ones not coming together because of family strife and history. This one's basically about madness, mental health, incertitude, and the tragedy of not doing, basically. It's quite different, I suppose, to Romeo and Juliet. And again, it's different to Macbeth because he does Macbeth, whereas Hamlet doesn't. But I suppose we have to talk about the story. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense what I'm saying, right, Dean?
Yeah, I think we should mention the story. So effectively, we have our main character, good Prince Hamlet. And he's the... Now, this confused me when I read in my copy of the book. I think there's a comma missing in the dramatis personae. And I spent about 20 minutes just trying to figure out who Hamlet was before I read the play. It says, Claudius, King of Denmark. And then below that, Hamlet, son to the former, comma, and nephew to the present king. It should have said son to the former, comma, and nephew to the present, comma, king. And that lack of comma caused me 20 minutes of like, who the hell is Hamlet? Like, how is he the son and the nephew of Claudius? What's going on? I just did not understand what was going on.
Because by shame on those editors.
Yeah,
shame
by
on
former, those editors. I just was so lost. But then I read about three lines of the play and figured it out very quickly. So I wasted my time with that.
The morale of that story is that, guys, punctuation is very important.
Get your commas right. So we've got Hamlet. We've got his friend Horatio. And let's see who else is like important. There's not that many key characters in this play.
So you basically got Hamlet, who's lamenting the death of his father. He's also called Hamlet. And he's already dead by the time the play starts. And basically, it starts off with guards seeing a ghost who resembles the former and deceased king.
Mm-hmm.
And then it moves on. Basically, Horatio comes in and he will tell Hamlet about this. But before that, it begins with Claudius, the king of Denmark and the uncle of Hamlet, who married Hamlet's mum. He's just bragging on. He's a bit bragger. He's very proud of himself. And Hamlet's first phrase actually in the play is a little more than kin and less than kind. So he's saying basically that Claudius is a bit too much of a family member now. He's become an uncle and a father, and he's married the mum. So basically a little more than kin and less than kind. So already that's the first phrase Hamlet says. So we already know that he has resentment, right? So it just begins straight off with resentment.
I understand the resentment. And obviously when he figures out later, like about his father, I understand. But if we start at the beginning, I mean, Claudius, he's not mean to Hamlet. He seems to be like a decent stepfather, realistically. Like he's caring about when Hamlet's feeling all moody and depressed and full of teenage angst, you know, going through his emo phase. They care about him, like the stepdad and the mum, like they care. You know, it's not as if it's not a wicked kind of character, you know. I think that he's a decent chap towards Hamlet for most of the play.
I have to say that already makes him suspicious, because a lot of Shakespeare's kings that are, let's just say, that don't have that didn't commit any murder before this would treat their kin a bit more roughly than this. So, I mean, the fact that King Claudius is treating Hamlet so decently, look at Romeo and Juliet, the fathers in those plays. I mean, although we have a parallel, I suppose, to Juliet's father being saying like she can marry anyone she wants, and then later turning into a bit of a mean character. I suppose there's a parallel.
That's similar here, I think, yeah.
Actually, there are a few parallels between Romeo and Juliet and Hamlet. We'll get into that in a second. But yes, basically, Hamlet is a teenager, guys. I mean, he's a teenager in the psychoanalytical sense. Yeah. So basically, what we have here is that he's resenting someone. He's resenting just his life in general, even though, yes, his stepdad is actually quite kind to him at the beginning. But yeah, he's already portrayed like this character who's moody, like an emo, basically. Mm-hmm. And but he finds out soon, yeah, that the ghost is none other than his own father, the deceased father of Hamlet.
And they say to Hamlet, "Hamlet, we need to quit your emo phase, cut your hair, and stop wearing Fallout Boy t-shirts." Right?
Exactly. They tell him that. So that's the whole play, guys. That's it. It's just about him getting a haircut, basically.
That's it.
And but when he finds out that the father's ghost talks to Hamlet. And he says that he has been murdered by his own brother, the current King Claudius. Well, then Hamlet is obviously even more upset than he already was. Mm-hmm. And that's when the whole play begins, really. So it's at the end of Act One. By the way, guys, most Shakespeare's plays only really begin at the end of Act One. That's when the action really takes in, when the character decides something pivotal. Like in Romeo and Juliet, Romeo falls in love and he decides to pursue Juliet only at the end of Act One. So that's always an important part in Shakespeare's play.
We have certainly an act of kind of an intro, basically, and then the rest of the play takes place in four acts. And you were right, and I noticed what you said to me last time, but the main character kind of disappears a bit during Act Four. That's like a standard cliche that I hadn't actually picked up on before, but yeah, you were just right.
Yeah, and it's a bit like Romeo really disappears in Act Four, but I think in Hamlet it's a bit less. He's still at the beginning of Act Four, but then the shift focuses to Ophelia, as does in Romeo and Juliet focuses to Juliet. So it often focuses to the female main character. Mm-hmm. Let's call it the second protagonist.
In terms of other key characters, we've got the Queen, Hamlet's mother, Gertrude, and of course Ophelia. Now, Ophelia is daughter to the Lord Chamberlain, Polonius, and that kind of rounds out the key characters at Claudius's court, I think. And there's some guards and a few other people, but those are the kind of main guys at the Danish court.
Exactly. And we also have Fortinbras, who's the Prince of Norway, but he doesn't appear to the end of the play, but he's kind of pivotal, so I'm just going to mention
He doesn't appear a lot, but he is important in certain aspects. I should mention as well, we have Laertes, Polonius' son, but he's also gone for a large portion of the play.
Exactly, but they're very important, and they're absent, but they're very present. And this is set in Denmark, guys, so there's this whole kind of Denmark and Norway became a union at one point. But before that, there was a lot of war between them, as well as Sweden. So this is basically starting off already was there is a background of Danish-Norwegian conflict, as well as England's English resentment. So there's kind of a lot of politics going on here. But basically, yeah. So the story continues with Hamlet seeking revenge, but unexpectedly, you might expect, all right, so he's angry and he kills the king, and that's the end of the story. It's just a short play, Shakespeare's shortest play ever. But of course not, people. It's a Shakespeare. It's a lot more complex. He basically is in turmoil. First of all, he doesn't know exactly if the ghost has a good intention. And second of all, he doesn't know how to seek the best revenge. In other words, he always comes up with excuses, actually. He could just have been a man and just killed King Claudius. I say a man because it's always kind of indicated that he's unmanly. There are many references in the play where he also tells himself, like, I feel like a woman. Now, that might sound a bit sexist, but the whole thing is basically there is a very kind of a psychoanalytical theme going on here that he may not be a mature man yet, rather an immature man. Yeah, it's his indecision, basically. It's the indecision that causes what happens later, what causes more tragedy. It's a tragedy of
So,
indecision.
let me give essentially a one sentence précis of the plot. It's
Sure.
effectively they see the ghost of Hamlet's father. They, inform Hamlet about it. He talks with the ghost and finds out that the father was murdered, effectively, and that's why his brother has become king and married his wife. So
Yes.
we think the whole play that Hamlet, as you say, that he's going to go for revenge. He's going to take a sword. He's going to go kill them, but he doesn't, and that's kind of the play,
That's basically it. That's basically the plot goes. But what happens is that there is Ophelia, who is in love with Hamlet, and Hamlet's in love with her. And we don't really get to see the development of their love. It's basically that they've already fallen in love
It's already
before that.
happened, yeah.
Yes. But she doesn't understand why Hamlet refuses her, basically. But basically, Hamlet, the theme of madness pops in, and it's not quite clear if Hamlet is becoming mad. So he becomes very eccentric in his language, and the people around him think he's losing it. But when he talks by himself alone on stage, it seems to be that he is pretending to be mad in order to con King Claudius. In order to make him believe that he is not harmful. So basically, that's his idea that he's actually acting. And did you notice then that the whole play has references to actors and plays and theater, like as do most of Shakespeare's plays,
Yes,
this
no,
one in
it
particular?
does. I mean, we even have the scene, a pivotal scene really in the play where to try to catch out the dad, this the uncle, I should say, Claudius, the king, into admitting guilt. They essentially stage a play with similar themes, hoping that he will, look guilty or scared or run off or whatever. So there's a whole scene about a play.
Yeah, so it's got a play. It's a play within a play, and that's already groundbreaking enough. And yes, of course. And Hamlet's got that great. It's got a great quote in it. Got many great quotes in
Many
it.
quotes. Yeah, I've got some written down here.
Yeah, do you want to go ahead?
Sure. I mean, there's some big ones and there's some small ones. Let me start with the minor quotes. Some that you'll still hear day to day, depending on who you're speaking with. But there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in our philosophy. That's one that we get in this play. That's a very well-known quote. The one, in my opinion, the best one, we get the very lyrical quote, "Doubt thou the stars are fire? Doubt that the sun doth move, doubt truth to be a liar, but never doubt I love."
Oh my God, that's the one I wrote down as well, actually.
Now, if you listen
I
to the
love that one.
song "Ophelia" by Emily Autumn, she uses that as lyrics, and it's an amazing song, so I recommend everyone check that out.
Didn't know that. And it continues, that quote ends with "Thine evermore, most dear lady, whilst this machine is to him Hamlet." And there's also a play called Hamlet Machine, a German play from the Soviet Union, actually.
All
And
right.
that also takes Hamlet, and basically it's a complete monologue in a very sort of existential way. But basically, yeah, this machine is to him. There are a lot of references to suicide, to like not being able to live fully. I mean, the fact that he says machine to him is basically just saying, I, Hamlet, can hardly live anymore. I'm just an automated being mm-hmm. without a soul. I'm just moving, but I don't really have a purpose. And that's what the whole play seems like that sometimes. What's the purpose?
Yeah.
What's Hamlet's purpose? And it's the ultimate, guys, it's the ultimate existentialist play. I mean, it must be the first existentialist piece of literature ever. I mean, Camus and Sartre would have loved this, because the big quote is to be or not to be.
That's the big one, to be or not to be.
That is the big question. And basically, it just reflects the whole side, if it's the whole time, if it's better to live, or is it better to live and kill? Is it better to commit suicide rather than commit a sin? And by the way, there's a very important aspect that a lot of people forget, which is religion. So I don't know if you know this thing, but it's mentioned right at the beginning that that Hamlet went to a certain university, right?
Yeah.
He went to the university of Wittenberg. And this is the university where Martin Luther attended. So basically Martin Luther, the person who created Protestantism, basically. So, and he started the Protestant Reformation. The idea is that, and there's an important aspect to this, it's basically Catholicism versus Protestantism. And the main difference, one key aspect about Protestants is that they really believe that their faith is preordained. All right, that basically that they cannot change their faith. Whereas if you're a Catholic, actually, you can always change your faith as long as you repent. That's a key difference. Mm-hmm. So Martin Luther did not believe that his sins could be basically forgiven, that God decided what road his life would take. So basically, it's not indicated the other religions, but basically the idea is that everyone can choose their lives. But Hamlet doesn't believe that, because Hamlet is a very scholarly persona, by the way. No one really understands him. He's a bit of a loquacious, sort of academic, pretentious, I suppose. Kind of
a little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
Yes, pretentious. Yeah.
I mean, the amount of monologues that Hamlet, but I think the play adds 1,000 words just by Hamlet's monologues.
I think so, right? I think so. But basically, if he's a proper Protestant, actually, if he believes in the Protestants, philosophy that faith cannot be changed, then it's quite understandable that he's debating to be or not to be. That is the question, because he is unsure if he can take the life into his own hands, because that goes against his philosophy. He just came back from this new, it was a very new thing at the time, the Martin Luther philosophy. And basically goes against his mind. So it's basically all about like minds interfering in the matters of heart and of bravery and of perhaps also intuition sometimes.
If you don't mind, PJ, I would like to read an entire piece of monologue from him, because it has...
I would love that.
It's the one starting with to be or not to be, but it has three quotes in one monologue. Yes. So I just thought I'd just read it, you know?
Please go ahead. Though.
Enter Hamlet. To be, you know, soliloquying with himself, just walking around in monologue, basically. To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them. To die, to sleep no more. And by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the 1,000 natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished. To die, to sleep. To sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub, for in that sleep of death what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil may give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life, for who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the law's delay, the insolence of office, and the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might his quietest make with a bare bodkin. Now he goes on and on and on, but you've got to be or not to be. You've got this mortal coil, and you've got to sleep perchance to dream. So three big quotes in one masterpiece monologue.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I mean, it's full of great quotes. One of my favorite ones is "Madness and great ones must not unwatched go." And it kind of reminded me, for some reason, it's completely out of context, but it just reminded me of like Trump or someone like that. He's not a great one. I'm not saying that, but he's a powerful person. And it's just interesting to see that in bad or good people, when they get mad, you really have to watch it.
Yeah. And in the, on the theme of madness, that actually gives us another little mini, it's a paraphrased quote, because Polonius says, "Though this be madness, yet there is method in it." And that's where we get the method in the madness kind of
idiom. Great, yeah. Exactly, yeah. And yeah, guys, so it's basically, it's the ultimate existentialist play. It's the ultimate teenage angst play. I mean, think about it, because before that, it was just, oh yeah, you killed my father, so thus I killed thee, and then I killed myself. And it's all very kind of, what's the word? It's not very realistic, is it? Come on. And especially Hamlet is so relevant, especially in this postmodern kind of existentialist age where everyone's questioning everything. It might have been really avant-garde, really ahead of its time. And it's really relevant now, because now everyone just questions. No one is going to just kill someone because they killed their father. And especially those people who really think a lot. So this is really like a thinker's, philosopher's play. But it's also kind of condemning that, I feel like Shakespeare's also kind of like, I get the feeling that Shakespeare often condemns his male kind of protagonists, like Romeo and Hamlet. If we stick with those two, are very imperfect kind of figures, aren't they? And they're both quite whiny. They're both very indecisive in a lot of aspects. I mean, yeah, no, a lot of parallels there.
There certainly are. There's one piece, just before we completely close the topic of quotes, because there are one or two little other ones. One that I really like. "You must be cruel only to be kind." That's still stayed in our modern idiom. "And the lady doth protest too much, methinks." when they're looking at the play, and they, you know, they're trying to put on the parallel for the king and queen to say, here's basically, you know, show your guilt in your face. This is the same thing you did. And they ask, Hamlet then asks the queen, well, what did you think of the play? And she just says, "The lady doth protest too much, methinks," which is my absolute favorite. And this is not a famous quote, nor is it integral to the plot, but PJ, my absolute favorite line in the whole play. It's the part where the ghost meets Hamlet while the queen is there, and she can't see the ghost.
Yeah. I love that part.
And the ghost says to Hamlet, you know, and she's like, what are you doing? You're talking to this invisible, like, what's going on? And the ghost says to Hamlet, talk to her. And he turns and he says, how is it with you, lady? Like, in this big dramatic scene with the ghost, with everything, it's like, well, what's the crack? You're like, how's it going? And it's such a like, what's new with you? I was like, well, I don't know what's new with me is that you're mad and you're talking to an invisible ghost.
It's great, yeah. And it's all about, like, and it might, again, be a reference to Martin Luther in the sense of, oh, you're crazy, but maybe he has a vision. So it's, and in this case, like, we kind of believe Hamlet. So kind of we think Hamlet is right the whole time, but no one else can understand his vision. Do you know what I mean? So it's basically, it's like the play itself. He's too avant-garde. He's too ahead of his time. He just came back from Wittenberg, and he's got all these great ideas, and he's in Elsinore where everyone's getting drunk. He's too ahead of his time. They even think he's mad. They would think he's mad, even though he wouldn't be pretending he's mad or if his father died.
That's
just
true.
Mad anyway.
Although, to be fair, I mean, he does say a lot of strange things, and he speaks in riddles at times, and they don't know what's going on. And then there's a part where they ask, you know, where's Polonius? And at this point, Hamlet has effectively killed Polonius, which we'll mention in a second how that happens. But Hamlet says, well, he's at supper. And they say, at supper? Where? Not where he eats, but where he is eaten. Because he is food for the worms.
He's crazy like this when he's with the person. So because he's playing a role. So Hamlet is actually acting within the play. So again, it's the play within the play. He's acting within the play to be a mad man. And it's more confusing because sometimes we don't know if he's acting or not. And Hamlet gives constructive criticism to the actors in the play. So there's a whole part which seems very irrelevant where he tells actors how to act, not to overdo it, not to underdo it.
And he's very specific with how to act. Like, you'd think he was a theater director. He gives him a lot of instruction, and these are the experts.
Hamlet says to Horatio at one point, "Wow, if fate had been different, I would have been an excellent actor, don't you think so?" And Horatio agrees. It's basically, it's they're all Shakespeare plays, some less, some more have references to plays, and this one is particularly rich in that imagery.
Did you notice any parallels with, I want to say two things about the play overall. I want to say, one, that it is a masterpiece, and it's essentially a kind of, it contains a lot of elements. You know, it's in some ways it's similar to Shakespeare's historical plays. It's essentially a fictional version of his historical plays. But then you've got the Romeo and Juliet type things, the tragicomedy type things. You've got a lot of tragedy really near the end. There is a love story. In a way, it's almost like an archetype template for the Shakespeare play. Like, it has everything. Yeah. It is like totally, this overarching, like, if you read this play, then you can see all the elements that you're going to get in all the other Shakespeare plays. But it's also very Greek. I think in many ways I find similarities with Greek plays, and just the whole story about Gertrude and Claudius. I think that's very similar to Agamemnon and Clytemnestra, because she basically goes off with someone else, and then he's trying to, you know, kill her or whatever. So it's a very similar kind of vibe. I just kept thinking of Clytemnestra as I was reading the scenes with the king and queen. So it's a big archetype Shakespeare play, but I find it, especially with the way the tragedy progresses and the big scene at the end, I mean, I think it's very Greek.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And don't forget that Shakespeare wasn't an academic playwright, like for example, Marlowe. So he basically had a Latin kind of based education, which was normal at the time, guys. This was basically, if you had a tiny bit of money, you send your kid to a normal kind of school. And it's basically based on Latin grammar and some of these Latin Greek stories. So he grew up with those stories, in mind, but like not too academic. He's not really that academic, Shakespeare. He might seem very difficult for us now in hindsight, but it's just because we don't have that education anymore. Actually, for anyone living in England, it wouldn't have been so kind of hard to grasp. I mean, these are plays for groundlings as well. The people, you know, look at the front of the stage who just had a very basic background, a lower class, I suppose you call it. But basically, it's not. He doesn't try to be too academic. And it's basically what I'm saying is that he's influenced by these Greek plays, but maybe not too specific. So he's kind of like basing it more or less on what he heard, what he read in his kind of free time, more than like in an academic setting or like childhood memory.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I've just done a quick Google search to get the details I was trying to make the comparison for. Yeah. So effectively, Clytemnestra kills her with her lover, Aegisthus, kills her husband Agamemnon, so he can then take over kind of rulership essentially. And then of course they also form a plot then against Agamemnon's son, the new kind of stepson Orestes. So it is a very similar parallel in that story.
Oh, totally. And also don't forget that now that we mentioned Greek plays, it's got an Oedipus kind of theme in it, guys. So it's by Oedipus. The Oedipus theory is by Freud, which is that a young boy is in love with his mom and wants to kill the father because the young boy wants to be with the mother. And there's a whole erotic implication. I mean, it's not very valid nowadays, you know. Jung refuted that theory. But the whole thing is that Gertrude, the mother, and Hamlet, they meet at Gertrude's closet. You know, so it's got a very intimate setting in the end of Act 3. Because she wants to talk with him about... Actually, Gertrude the whole time wants to talk with her son. It was interesting. Like, almost everything... Like, it seems like half of what she said is like, I would like to talk with you. But they never get to a real conversation. And at the end of Act 3, basically, Hamlet is trying to express himself. And this is very interesting. He seems to be very good with words, but you get the feeling that he didn't express himself. He actually never expresses himself fully.
No.
He
can express himself in overly poetic monologue, but not in any kind of conversation with anyone.
And this is the Oedipus complex, basically, that some people think that he, Hamlet, might be in love with his own mom. No, I don't really think that actually, but this is just an interesting, but it might be a subtle version of the Oedipus complex, that he is in love with his mom, but not in an erotic way, and that he is very jealous of the father, in this case, the father's substitute. So it's very similar to the Oedipus theory, but not really, it's not really similar.
It's not strong, I don't think, yeah.
No, it's not, but it's just a thing to mention there. And also that he just, Hamlet, especially when he's pretending to be mad, says a lot of he says a lot of erotic things to his own mom and to Ophelia. So there's a lot of reference there, very vague actually. He's always sugarcoating it, but there are one or two things he says to Ophelia that indicates that, oh, Ophelia is basically a girl that's easy to get, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to talk about Hamlet and Ophelia because they are in love at the beginning of the play, as you said earlier, and then Hamlet seems to go off her. And I think the reason is because, I mean, my interpretation was basically because of what his mum, what he then finds out his mum did to his dad, he kind of loses trust in women almost to an extent.
Yes, and, he mentioned several times, yeah.
Yeah, and he doesn't then want, you know, Ophelia, and he keeps telling her, get thee to a nunnery, you know. It's better for you to just go and be in a nunnery than to continue with this kind of, with this normal life, essentially.
Totally right, yeah. And Ophelia is devastated. And yes, so just before that, though, we have to mention, so while Hamlet, actually, no, I can't say this because it's a plot, a twist, but basically someone gets killed at the end of Act 3, just the same, oh, what a coincidence, at the end, in Romeo and Juliet, at the end of Act 3, Tybalt gets killed.
Well, do you think do we need to hide that, or can we give that one away? Because there's a lot more that happens after that.
We can give it away. Just close your ears for 2 seconds and then be back, guys. I'm saying it now. Close your ears for 2 seconds and then be back. Polonius will be killed. The father of Ophelia. Tragedy. Tragedy. Just like Tybalt was a cousin of Juliet. So both these women have the same dilemmas. They're both in love, Ophelia and Juliet.
What's your take on Polonius?
All right, so Polonius basically, well, just like Tybalt, he's a troublemaker. In a more comic sense, Polonius, but he's asking for trouble. And Hamlet says to Polonius before he gets killed, how now? A rat? Dead for a ducat. Dead! Yes, Polonius is a kind of a ratty figure. He's always interfering, always changing. He's trying to interfere in Hamlet's life, and he's shaping Hamlet's destiny. And that's kind of like a big taboo with Hamlet's destiny. It's kind of a trigger point with him.
I guess his interfering leads to his death. He's a schemer. I suppose every Shakespeare tragedy needs a schemer somewhere. But did you not notice that he's also a good father?
Yes, he is a good father, right? He does mean the best for
He does. And that first thing that struck me about him is, you know, he's a traditional good father. I mean, not quite so modern, in the sense, you know, he doesn't want he wants to protect his daughter from this young man that wants to hit her. You know, there's that going on. But then with Laertes, at the beginning of the play, you know, with his son, he gives him some good advice to, like, always kind of be a good gentleman, basically, and to kind of do the right thing.
So Laertes, the brother of Ophelia. Well, yes, although he does have, like, a sexist kind of idea of, like, I possess my daughter. Just like, this is seen so many times in Shakespeare's plays. The father is trying to possess the daughter and but not having control and trying to regain the control. We've done this with every single play, I think, so far, except Comedy of Errors. We've mentioned in every single play that there are father figures, kings and actual biological fathers who lose control of their subjects. And it's the same here. King Claudius loses control. Yeah, and he says that King Claudius says it when he's talking to himself. He has a lot of doubt and he's trying to control. He's trying to regain control. It's old man trying to regain control on the woman. But Polonius might be the most innocent version, although there's a bit of that as well. And it seems unfortunate that he has to die. But it is unfortunate because Hamlet does not realize that Polonius. He just kind of goes on a whim. Like, he just, all of a sudden, there's someone behind the tapestry. And like, who's this? And he kills this person. But it's a lot less excusable, I find, than with Tybalt in Romeo and Juliet, who was really kind of like, he was going to basically kill people. So Romeo killed him. Or basically,
it is less excusable. It's almost totally unnecessary.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I mean, because Tybalt killed Mercutio And so Romeo killed Tybalt. Not an excuse, guys. Hey, please don't do this as an example. But yeah, it's a lot less excusable. And this is the end of Act 3, guys. So Act 3 is always basically, the end of Act 3 is that the hero failed and that he has to leave. So it's not always the case, but it often is the case with Shakespeare's plays. And thus, as we mentioned, Act 4 is about mainly the second protagonist. We're usually the one protagonist. And in this case, Ophelia has become mad herself. So madness, mental illness, and the way that it's perceived. There's also grief. If you can see it maybe as grief rather than madness, how about they're both sane, but they're both grieving? This is also basically a critique on how people cannot deal with other people's grief and excuse it as a mental illness. So there's this whole kind of like...
PJ, part of... Sorry, well, continue that. I cut you off, so continue what you were saying first.
No, that's it. Please, go ahead.
Because Ophelia's mental illness is manifested by essentially singing sexist tavern songs. She essentially becomes a lower class, you know, drinking man at a pub and starts singing. So there's two here. Yeah. tomorrow is St. Valentine's Day, all in the morning bedtime, and I am a maid at your window to be your Valentine. Then up he rose and donned his clothes and dubbed the chamber door, let in the maid that out a maid never departed more. And then we also have another. By gaze and by St. Charity, alack and fie for shame, young men will do it if they come to it, by cock they are to blame. Quoth she, before you tumbled me, you promised me to wed. And he answers, so would I have done by yonder sun, and I hadst not come to my bed. So I would have married you to get sex if you hadn't, but you gave it up too easily, you know. Mm. And that was, and that's a lot of her little songs. They're very like, you know, it's strange that her madness is formed in these little rhymes that you would see a bunch of, you know, sexist men singing it in a tavern.
I think there is madness to this method because listen to this. Hamlet references, I think in Hamlet, my theory is, what do you think, Dean? I think Ophelia and Hamlet actually, you know, they had sex, basically, before they were married, because they're obviously not married. And I don't think it's like that in Romeo and Juliet, actually. There's a lot of theory about that, but I don't think in Romeo and Juliet...
I don't think so in Romeo, no.
But I think in Hamlet, it's indicated that they might have something. And because Hamlet mentioned it several times, very vaguely, to kind of intimidate, kind of like make her feel bad. And now it's kind of like the guilt is consuming her and she feels like she's being used and she also feels like she's lost her virginity. But then maybe it never happened. Maybe it just never happened. Maybe she's just, it's all in her head. Maybe she is actually mad. I mean, what do you think about that?
To be honest, it's not something I'd really thought about. I just assumed that they hadn't slept together just because that was more the culture at the time. There is that strong love, and it is different from a Romeo and Juliet type love. Yeah. So you might be very right. You might be very right. It's possible that they did, and that would explain, because she does really feel jilted when he changes his mind during the post-murder, when he finds out what happened to his dad and he changes his mind about her. And I mean, they repair that towards the end, but... you know, she does feel very, very hurt and jilted. So it's very possible.
And guys, just like in Romeo and Juliet, Ophelia dies.
Ophelia dies. Shall we talk a little bit about the end of the play without giving spoilers?
Yes.
What can we say?
Well, we can say, guys, that Laertes comes back to seek vengeance on his father's death and then Ophelia's madness. And a beautiful quote also by the artist. I really like the character. But basically, guys, this is also very important that we mentioned Fortinbras, who is the Prince of Norway, so away from Denmark. This is set in Denmark, but he's in Denmark. And he's seeking revenge on his dad's death. And now his uncle is in power, so he seeks revenge. And he's coming to Denmark, and he's coming to Poland, and he's going to be the new king. And Laertes does the same thing. He's going to seek revenge because he knows that someone killed his father. And his sister has become mad. And they're taking action. And this is what, and Hamlet is in the same situation and he doesn't take action. Hence, he is a tragic figure. Basically, so you got three, and it's a triangle, basically. You got Fortinbras and Laertes and Hamlet. And Hamlet just doesn't take action. And especially Fortinbras. Fortinbras is basically the alter ego, not the alter ego, he's basically like the mirror image of Hamlet. Of what Hamlet should be.
Yeah.
And then this is what Fortinbras is doing.
Hamlet, Hamlet fails to take action, except, as you mentioned, he kills Polonius. But that wasn't him taking decisive action. That was him throwing a kind of teen tantrum and stabbing the nearest thing, not even knowing it was. You know, that wasn't him really taking action. That was more of a temper tantrum, if anything.
Well, I think we should leave the end. Maybe we'll write the ending, but basically, read, guys, to see what happens in scene 5, and you can decide if he takes action or not. But there's also the idea of,
we have to say something. I don't want to give any details, but basically it turns into an action movie, and it, the you know, it just goes wild. It just goes wild. The bodies stack up everywhere.
Oh, definitely. And it's the same as, like, it's like Macbeth. It becomes very bloody all of a sudden. And I really like the ending and what he does. But there's still the element of not just the tragedy of decision, but how about the tragedy of deciding too late and already a lot of people are killed?
Yeah.
Because that's what's basically happened, without giving too much.
I mean, Fortinbras arrives. It's almost a comical scene that he arrives kind of to conquer, and there's just no one there to conquer. Like,
totally, right?
They've done his job for him, you know?
You just imagine like a Quentin Tarantino movie or a Takashi Miike movie, like this kind of very bloody scene at the end. Eren's already gone, you know? And just Horatio is there to tell the story. And he was going to, he said, I'm more Roman than Danish. I'm going to die for you. And then, no, you have to live to tell a story.
That's a parallel to Romeo and Juliet, I think, after the kind of scene with Romeo and Juliet in the tomb. There's the one guy left to tell the story, the witness, you know.
Yes. And Fortinbras is like the prince, isn't he, at the end. And Fortinbras says the end of the play is Fortinbras talking, and the end of Roman Juliet's play is the prince talking, I believe. My God, it's just like he just basically took Roman Juliet, which was supposed to have been written a bit earlier, and just like, all right, so I'm just going to use the same format, just change the character setting.
I think he just took a lot of elements of all his different genres and just put the best of everything in. And this is a middle play. It's kind of right smack bang in the middle of his works, and it just epitomizes everything, you know, that he's done. I think
totally. Yeah. Well, guys, I think this about wraps it up.
I think that's us.
It's a great play. Read it, watch it, look out for these details. So much to it. It's awesome, yeah. I love it.
I'm going to go now watch, not now, but tomorrow, we're going to watch Ophelia on Netflix to see it's a film that is this play from Ophelia's perspective. So that'll be interesting.
Wow, okay. And I actually mean to read a play called Fortinbras by Lee Blessing, written in the 90s. So there's a lot of kind of other stuff written around it. It's always kind of interesting what other people think.
Well, guys, go to booksboys.com, check out all the things there. Thank you for being a patron. And of course, this has been the Playboys. Have a Shakespearean day. PJ, do we know what next month's play is going to be? We haven't decided yet, have we?
We haven't decided yet, but I can tell you it's going to be dramatic. It's going to be spectacular. So keep it up, guys.
Well, there go my suggestions then.
There goes your suggestions. Well, I thought, should we mention it? I thought we had one already. Should we mention it?
Okay, do we have one? I didn't know we did. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I thought it's going to be full thunder and witches kind of hissing.
Okay.
And there's going to be blood everywhere and blood you can't get off your fingers and you're trying to rub it out. You're trying to rub it off. And it doesn't matter how much fairy liquid you use, you just can't get rid of it.
Well, there we go. We can do that one. So that's going to be, guys, next month. Macbeth, the Scottish play, right? Don't say Macbeth.
The spectacular, the one and only, the dramatic.
You've trumped me. I was going to suggest that we do a completely irrelevant one, like the Merry Wives of Windsor or some garbage. But now you've trumped me by bringing forth a decent play. So yeah, we'll do Macbeth.
We can do another one. We can do another one of your choice later, though.
No, I think Macbeth's definitely the right way to go on that.
It's gotta be.
Have a Shakespearean day.
Indeed. See ya.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.